28. Richard Dolan and the National Thermitic State. December 10, 2009. Richard Dolan is an historian, noted author, and researcher into the UFO phenomenon, with his main focus being on archival records which prove that the official bodies know more about the phenomenon than they are willing to admit. He has also written about topics other than UFOs, such as 9/11. I have followed some of Richard Dolan's work, mainly on UFO matters, over the years, and have found him to be an interesting and knowledgeable researcher, speaker, and commentator. Fairly recently, I found myself agreeing with much of what he said with regard to the exopolitics movement, in that many assumptions about the nature of exopolitical entities seem to be made without good basis. In 2005, I also privately applauded him for posting articles about 9/11, when hardly any other UFO or ET researchers seemed to be considering it as any kind of important issue. About the only other writer who's written about UFOs and 9/11 is Jim Mars. On March 6, 2009, I'd exchanged a couple of emails with Richard Dolan, initially to compliment him on a podcast he did with the Paracast in February 2009. In the same message, I also mentioned areas of research I was involved with, which I thought he would be interested in. I've included a copy of this email below. Richard responded, thanking me for my message, and he commented in his reply that he had met Jim Fetzer at a conference. He also mentioned he would continue to look into 9/11 and that he knew other people who were doing the same thing. On June 27, 2009, I spoke at an exopolitics event in Leeds, UK, primarily organized by my friend Anthony Beckett. I was pleased that Richard Dolan had agreed to come and speak at the event too, along with my friend Lloyd Pye, who deserves everyone's thanks for his dogged perseverance with the Starchild skull research and all that goes with it. On June 26, to help promote the conference, I drove up to Leeds with Lloyd for a brief appearance on BBC Radio Leeds. Anthony had told me that Richard Dolan was also hoping to appear in the interview, but due to problems with city traffic, he did not quite get there in time and missed the 10-minute slot we had been given. However, Richard met Lloyd and myself at a radio station, and we went for an enjoyable lunch a short distance away. During lunch, we discussed a number of things, including, as I recall, the latest Star Trek film which had been in the cinema a few weeks earlier. However, during the end of the lunch, the conversation switched to 9/11, and I began to tell Richard about the research I had been involved with, namely that of Dr. Judy Wood, as readers of this article and website may already be familiar. Unfortunately, I did not have a long period to talk with Richard Dolan about these issues, as I had to return home to collect my children from school. I did have time to mention the presence of Hurricane Erin, and in particular the Alaskan magnetometer readings, which Dr. Wood had uncovered. I gave Richard several A4 sheets about these things, which I had purposely printed out and brought with me. Also, I knew I would be seeing him on the following day for the conference itself, and I intended to give him further information then. On June 27, 2009, as the first speaker of the day, I delivered a presentation about Wilbur Smith. Speaking to Richard Dolan later, I was, I have to say, flattered when he complimented me on this presentation, though I can't take much credit for it because all of the data it was compiled from was sent to me by Grant Cameron. During one or more of the conference intervals, I spoke to Richard about the mysterious behavior of Alfred Weber with regard to Dr. Judy Wood's research into the connection between the WTC destruction, directed energy weapons, the Hutchison effect, and Hurricane Erin. I gave Richard a copy of the booklet I had printed out, 9/11 Evidence and Analysis, Volume 4. I discussed with him, in brief, the contents of this booklet. I'm fairly certain I gave him a set of 5 DVDs, including Dr. Judy Wood's Madison presentation, September Clues, 9/11 and the Hutchison Effect, 9/11 and Hurricane Erin, and 9/11 Finding the Truth. At least I gave him a copy of the 9/11 Finding the Truth DVD, because that includes a summary of most of the other information. When the conference was over, I drove Richard and another friend of mine to Wagamama's restaurant in Leeds, but for no particular reason, I did not sit with him there. However, when we left, I placed in his hands an envelope containing the above materials. I left with the impression that Richard was a polite, charming, and affable person with a good sense of humor. As we are fairly similar in age and have children of a similar age, I also felt I had a few things in common with him. I was, therefore, very hopeful that Richard would have found out what I told him sufficiently interesting to explore the manner that, at my own expense, I gave to him. I hoped that he would be able to use his existing knowledge, background, and the research he had done to put the information I had given him into a meaningful context. Following the conference, I emailed Richard a few photographs I had taken on the Friday and Saturday. In hindsight, perhaps I was being too optimistic and expecting him to respond to either the photos or the information I had supplied to him. It was only a few days later that I discovered the likely reason for Richard Dolan's lack of response. It seemed to be explained in a broadcast he made in September 2009. Richard Dolan's anniversary broadcast. On September 11, 2009, Richard Dolan, along with his wife Karen, made a podcast on the Paranormal Radio Network discussing the events of September 11, 2001. This broadcast only recently came to my attention when it came up in a telephone discussion I was having with a fellow researcher. So I downloaded it and listened with interest. Richard Dolan, by describing how he began to realize the official story of the 9/11 attacks was bogus, for example, at about 5.5 minutes into the broadcast, said, "I purchased a copy of David Ray Griffin's first book on 9/11 called The New Pearl Harbor." He then talks a little bit about David Ray Griffin. The broadcast was already reminiscent of Jim Fetzer's appearance on Richard Syrett's show a year to the day before this broadcast. At around 12 minutes into the show, in discussing transnational control groups, Dolan mentioned the Council on Foreign Relations, or the CFR, the Bilderberg Group, and the Federal Reserve, and he described how only a few people have time to research these entities. Unfortunately, Dolan did not point out that the author of the foreword to Griffin's first edition of The New Pearl Harbor, which he had mentioned only minutes earlier, is none other than CFR member Richard Falk. The Thermitic State. Having listened to the introduction, I should perhaps not have been too surprised as to how the rest of the broadcast unfolded. It wasn't long before the subject of the destruction of the WTC came up. Among other issues, Richard began talking about dust samples. He talked about people providing dust samples, but he did not, for example, name Janet McKinley as one of those providers, a minor point, but I mention it because including specific names, dates, and times, etc., makes it easier for people to verify the story for themselves. After the discussion of dust samples came the inevitable alleged molten metal. At about 34 minutes, Dolan said, quote, "At the World Trade Center, there was molten metal for weeks after the collapse. Beneath the rubble, molten metal. Some of these girders showed signs of having been melted, which you would need temperatures of outrageously high temperatures. And the jet fuel from the jetliners did not and could not attain such temperatures." Unquote. Excuse me, Richard, were you aware that Rudy Giuliani was one of the people who seemed to start these stories? What was the fuel source? How was there a lake on West Street without steam explosions? For those unfamiliar with my line of rebuttal, please see Dr. Judy Wood's discussion of these issues either on her website or in videos about her research. Dolan then mentions the detection of sulfur in the WTC dust and says, quote, "This is key now for what is known as thermite or thermate. There's been a recent study that came out, published on the web. I've read the study and it's all very impressive. And a detailed study dealing with thermitic pyrotechnics in the World Trade Center samples." Unquote. Though Richard, unfortunately, did not state the name or other details of the paper explicitly, I think it is safe to assume he is referring to the paper by Stephen E. Jones, Niels Herrett, et al. This paper does not stand up to scrutiny for a number of reasons, not least of which is that thermite does not turn steel or other materials to dust. It melts steel. Also, the title and nature of the paper is essentially frivolous. For this reason, why use the term thermitic materials in the title? Is it an admission that no thermite was present? Is it another evolution of the idea of thermite analogs? What is thermite, anyway? Answer: aluminum powder and iron oxide, or rust. The exterior of WTC Towers contains aluminum, and there were some rusty beams inside the buildings. Therefore, how can this point to a smoking gun of thermite? You would expect to find aluminum powder and iron oxide in the remains of the World Trade Center, whether the thermite was there or not. For convenience, I created a blog which collects together most of the basic questions and points that essentially expose the thermite theory as a distraction. A theory as full of holes as the official story. Dolan, however, has seemingly not considered any other options at all. Dolan's cavalier disregard of evidence and information supplied to him by myself continues apace. At 35 minutes, he says, quote, "The dust samples were remarkably consistent, and all of them showed signs, at a microscopic level, of something that absolutely should not have been there. And what that is advanced, highly energetic thermite." Now, regular thermite is an incredibly effective explosive, and you don't just find this stuff lying around. Karen says, "It would never be used in construction, and they wouldn't use it for welding or anything like that." No, because it's used to blow things up. Thermite, when it's heated to a certain temperature, causes explosions, and that's why it's valuable. It's a great explosive. The type of thermite that we're talking about is only available in the military. It's thermate, and it's nano-engineered. In other words, it's incredibly highly integrated with itself. Unquote. I don't think it is a good use of time to point out all the serious problems with this brief segment. However, I think almost everyone would agree that aluminum dust and iron oxide dust should have been found in what remained of the building, as those substances were present in the building in large quantities. Also, the last 10 words are a pretty good guide to the general bogosity of this segment. In an overly judgmental fashion, at 37 and a half minutes, Dolan says, quote, "Any reasonable mind looking at this is going to think, this is a smoking gun," unquote. At this point, you should, of course, stop reading this article, because clearly I don't have a reasonable mind. I used to think I had a reasonable mind, because I used to think that the thermite story was valid, and that the main proponent of the story was telling the truth. However, further study of the evidence has clearly made my mind unreasonable, because I found out that this so-called smoking gun was a fake, planted to distract reasonable minds from looking at other more powerful, more substantive, and corroborative, and far more significant and compelling evidence. This evidence, it seems, also ties in, at some level, to Dolan's own field of research in relation to black projects and black technology. Finding the truth. Near the end of the broadcast, Richard Dolan stated the importance of finding the truth about 9/11. At about 73 minutes, he says, quote, "9/11 was a day that affected every single person living on planet Earth. We owe it to ourselves. We owe it to future generations to find the truth of what happened, because that day is the point on which all other subsequent points we have lived through hinge upon. If we don't have an open, full discussion of that critical day, it's like a sore that will not go away. We've got to get to the truth." Unquote. If you have read this far, then you will perhaps empathize with me when I report how hollow those words sounded to me. As I've said before, finding the truth is not possible when so much evidence is ignored. It was an exclusive broadcast. It would take too long for me to list all of the evidence that Richard Dolan excluded from his broadcast, but here are the key items. 1. Contra-evidence to thermite and molten metal. 2. Any critique of the act of thermite nonsense paper. 3. Connection of Stephen E. Jones to cold fusion. 4. Dr. Judy Wood's RFC, or request for correction, to NIST. 5. Directed energy weapon effects in WTC evidence. 6. Links between NIST contractors and directed energy weapons companies, i.e., the military-industrial complex, which Dolan has written about in his books. 7. The Hutchison effect and WTC evidence. 8. Hurricane Aaron study. 9. Court cases of Wood and Reynolds. 10. Contra evidence for plane crashes at the WTC. 11. List of evidence that must be explained, which can be found at drjudywood.com. The National Thermitic State. The evidence indicates that Richard Dolan has now subscribed to the National 9/11 Thermite Program. In other words, it seems that Richard Dolan's presentation was set precisely within the boundaries of what some of us now call the official 9/11 truth, which consists, roughly speaking, of planes crashing into the WTC, bombs in the buildings, or BIB, and the use of magic thermite, or even space thermite, which can either be an incendiary, an explosive, paint-on, an example of advanced nanotechnology, or a welding material, or whatever you need it to be. Here again, we see a repeated pattern that specifically in relation to Dr. Judy Wood's research into the events of 9/11, people in the alternative research community are seemingly unable to look at factual evidence, and instead they ostracize those presenting it. Did Richard Dolan just make an innocent mistake? Some people reading this may think that Richard Dolan just has a difference of opinion. Can we have a difference of opinion about whether thermite melts things or turns them to dust? Or they may say, well, he can't talk about what you talk about because it's too controversial. Another person said to me, well, maybe he just can't take the truth of it. These reasons for not talking about the most profound, most well-researched, and most compelling 9/11 evidence could apply to other people, but not to Richard Dolan. This is a guy who writes about UFOs and aliens, over 1,000 pages in his 2 volumes so far. Surely he's not worried about profundity or controversy. Popularity, then? Popularity versus the truth. I've heard a number of other people say things like, well, if we talk about the connection between 9/11 and weather control, or there being no plane crashes on 9/11, it won't be popular. Perhaps Richard Dolan's decision not to discuss court-submitted evidence and instead focus on something which turns out to be highly speculative at best and provably bogus at worst stemmed from this feeling, i.e., the discussion of this evidence would not be popular. But if we take this view to an extreme, certainly at the current time, we might as well just go back to the official story of 9/11, namely, Muslims gone bad plus lapses in U.S. security, and have done with it. After all, that is still, despite our best efforts, the most popular story. Truth is not affected by popularity. Whether the towers turned to dust or burned down, fell down or melted is a question of basic observation, not popularity. Why did Richard Dolan exclude all the most important evidence? I cannot resist trying to understand the reason why someone as intelligent, eloquent, and articulate as Richard Dolan, who has been writing, researching, and giving presentations in one of the most controversial fields there is, UFOs, would exclude from his discussion so much of the most important 9/11 evidence available. Why did he completely exclude this evidence, compiled, as it was, by the most highly and relevantly qualified scientist, who has been publicly researching these matters for several years? Why was there no mention at all of any of this evidence in a 77-minute broadcast? I can think of several possible reasons. Perhaps Richard Dolan thought the evidence was insignificant. If that is the case, then we cannot really lend him much credibility in 9/11 research, seeing as the evidence he excluded from his discussion has been put into a legal case to challenge NIST's due-related contractors. This was presented to the United States Supreme Court. Also, some of the evidence is so basic that its importance, in my experience, becomes immediately obvious to those that are shown it on paper or on a screen. Perhaps Richard Dolan has been offered or paid money not to talk about this evidence. Again, if I asked whether he had, he may well deny being offered money. I doubt he has been offered or paid money, however. Speculation and unpopularity. So, is there a fourth possibility? Could this possibility apply to other people who cannot seem to understand that thermite does not turn steel to dust? Rather, it melts steel or other metal and burns paper. Could this possibility apply to other people who cannot accept there was plenty of aluminum and iron oxide already in the WTC's structure? Could this possibility even be applied to Stephen E. Jones, Richard Gage, Kevin Barrett, and a number of others? Are these people being remotely influenced? Note, I have no evidence to suggest this is what is actually happening, other than observing what people have said, i.e., suggesting thermite turns things to dust is patently ridiculous, and then comparing that to their apparent intelligence and their other behavior. This tends to make me rule out the first three possibilities. Is there some kind of ongoing MK-Ultra-type program which can subtly influence people's specific thought processes, behavior, or actions? Perhaps, in a given person, certain strands of behavior or thought can be influenced or dictated, i.e., everything else about the person is normal, but they get simple, basic facts wrong, and when presented with contra-evidence, they cannot process it. There is some kind of blockage put in place. I know this is pretty way out there. And also one has to ask, what makes some people immune from such remote influence? Perhaps there is even a gene which makes people susceptible to remote influence, just like there is a gene which prevents or allows people from tasting a synthetic compound called PTC. Please, don't play with thermite. Whether my speculation about remote influence is correct or wildly wrong, I think it seems worth suggesting that, based on the available evidence, people should not play with thermite. They may end up getting burned, either physically or intellectually.